Soul Surmise with Steve Stockman, looking at issues of faith and culture. Welcome to our autumn series of Soul Surmise podcasts. My name's Steve Stockman, and I'm delighted to have Duke Special, a.k.a. Peter Wilson, or is it a.k.a. Duke Special? whatever one of those is, it's good to have you, Peter.
Thanks for having us. Me.
And I have in my hand Blood for Ghosts, which is the new record. And yeah. I would love to be on a chat show now, because I would hold it up to the camera yeah. because this is the 12-inch
Steve Letterman
version of that. And interesting, just talking to you before we start it, that it's a long time since we had a Duke Special pop rock record, because the last three have been collaborations of sorts, because you know, which was all about Belfast with traditional Irish, and then you had the Michael Longley album, and now you have this, which is part of what you were doing at university. So before we get to Queens, tell me why it's so long since you did one of your own.
Good question. Yeah, it's 2015, I think, Lookout Machines come out. I think sometimes it just gets a bit exhausting writing about yourself. And I've done like various theatre, written for theatre pieces, and then, as you said, these records. And there's something kind of energizing about responding to other things that aren't the stuff you're going through yourself. Nevertheless, you end up finding yourself in those things anyway. The stuff with Ullud, about Belfast, and Michael Longley poems, and which I was responding to poems that kind of hit me in some way. So that was kind of about me. And then this was responding to old song sheets from an archive, songs of mainly Irish-American origin that had been collected by a guy called Michael O'Donnell in Philadelphia and over about 50 years in the 1900s. And he had a great interest in collecting these song sheets, over 1,400, and was then looking for a home for them. And Princess Grace heard about them, because she came from Philadelphia, and she ended up buying them, and they are now housed in the Princess Grace Irish Library in Monaco, which I haven't been to, unfortunately.
Oh, is that? We'll come to that later. I mean, I'm interested also when you start saying that, you know, when you started out in the 90s, earlier than that probably, but when I came across you in the mid-90s and it was looking for... you know, artists in those days, you were still looking for the deal, you were looking to tour a record, and it's become the music business has changed so vastly since that, that what you've been able to do, you've been able to do these side projects, which I think nowadays probably gives a longevity to an artist in some way, because to do what you were doing all the time, I know that many artists are finding that hard. How many do you sell? You're always having to tour. Whereas what you've done with theatre, what you've done with all this, has given you a wider career and a career. In some ways, it's kept it going. Is that fair?
I mean, I could have probably just continued touring relentlessly and doing that whole thing. And yeah, but I find it really not great for me on a personal level. So I wanted to find a way of being creative that didn't I didn't have to do that. And I think as well, just looking at these other interesting kind of inspirations and source material to write from, yeah, it has kind of really enriched me. Not financially so much, but just artistically. And I think, yeah, not relying or feeling beholden to some sort of machine has really helped me just love it still. I absolutely love what I do, and I love discovering things and writing about them and then going on to the next thing. You know, I really love that.
I mean, what'll be interesting is when you take those 8 years since you've made your own songwriter album, it'll be really interesting to see when the next album comes out how much of this stuff has influenced that, or maybe by that stage you'll want to stay clear of this. You went to Queen's and PhD, was that what you did? And it seems to me that that's where this started out. So tell me, first of all, why you not, I'm not aware of Noel or Liam Gallagher's going to Queen's to do a PhD. Why did you think that was a good move at the time? And then why did you decide what you did?
I'd been talking to a few people. Like I've been teaching a wee bit at Queen's to do with songwriting and performance. And everyone that I spoke to there seemed that seemed to be the baseline of actually getting any kind of permanent post. So I'd begun to consider that, and then I was thinking about, well, I could do something about songwriting as the obvious thing. And then I was asked to come and speak at a guy, Professor David Johnson, was doing a talk about adaptation. And he asked me to come and share my experiences of adapting the Brecht play Mother Courage and Her Children and writing music for that. And it was after I'd done that that I kind of thought, flip, the last few things that I've done, like writing songs based on old photographs or Mother Courage or Michael Longley thing, was actually a form of kind of adaptation, of translation, if you like. And I, the more I thought about it, I thought that would be a really interesting way to look at songwriting, because the more I thought, I realised that like writing any kind of song, even if it's about your own experiences, is like a form of translation, because you're having to put something into words that weren't in words before, that something ephemeral, that you a feeling, an emotion, and you have to translate that into something material. And I thought that could be a really interesting way of looking at songwriting. And I approached David to see if he'd be one of my supervisors, and he agreed. And that's what I did. So I was sitting in translation classes, learning about theory behind translation, and then applying that to, at the same time, then getting involved in writing and responding to different art forms, and then looking at how do they compare.
And how did you choose the art forms that you decided then to look at?
Well, I had five to begin with, and then they were going, there's far too many, you'll find out this is... And I was going, no, I'm determined to do this. And then I realised...
I thought at one stage there were seven, but that's only in my head.
I might have had a few things that I was choosing from, yeah, and I whittled it down to five. And then I realised, oh my goodness, any one of these would be a down the rabbit hole. So I picked the poetry of a guy called James Harper that I bumped into at a gig in Paris. Then the paintings of Modigliani, an Italian painter who lived in Paris. And then I'd been reading Harper's poetry, and he mentioned that he'd, as the kind of preface to one of his poems, that he'd been at this Princess Grace Irish Library studying the Book of Kells. So I kind of, that sounds interesting, I looked it up, and the first thing I saw was home to this archive. So I loved the kind of synergy between the things, that one thing led to another. And I guess poetry, visual art, and old song sheets I'd always been interested in those, so... but yeah, it could have equally been other things that I was responding to.
And as well as... studying at Queen's and all that you had to write and do there, there's 10 songs on this record.
Yeah.
Now, there's 1,400 pieces, is there, in Princess? Yeah, no, 1,682.
Yeah. There you go.
It's in the back of this record.
That must be right.
I mean, is it what you said earlier where you had to read all 1,600 and find 10 that resonated with you, or did that happen quickly, or were there ways to sift through that quickly?
So they were catalogued by a guy originally from Armagh called Fintan Ballely, and so I got in touch with him, and he sent me basically a massive spreadsheet of the title, the year, who published it, the kind of subject matter, and who wrote it. And so I read through those and made a short list of 50, because he said, look, I'll send you 20 PDFs of the sheet music themselves, but I'll only be able to send 20. So we'll whittle it down to 50 and then down to 20, and he sent me the PDFs for that. And then I got my friend Ruth McGinley, who you know, your listeners might, I'm sure, will know, amazing pianist, and my sight reading's very slow, so she made a recording of each of the 20.
Wow.
And sent that to me, and out of those, then I picked 10 that I thought I could do something with and kind of reimagine. And it was interesting because some of them, like out of the hundreds and hundreds of song titles, some of them just felt that they just wouldn't work today, whether they were, you know, comedic songs about Irish people living in America, or maybe just subjects that were not PC, for example, today, or, you know, or there would be, yeah, just the language was just wouldn't work, or maybe overly familiar to me. So I settled on 10 that either I hadn't heard of and sounded interesting, and or else when I heard the piano part sounded really beautiful. Or, for example, one is The Foggy Dew, which many people would know.
Yeah. But Sinead did it with the Chieftains, I think.
That's right, yeah. So that's based on a version from 1919, but the song sheet predated that. So it was words written by and an arrangement by two sisters from Oma called Charlotte and Edith Milligan. And the words were completely different to the one that are well known.
Oh.
And the tune comes from way before that. So part of the joy of this project was kind of learning about the songs and tracing the origins and the kind of evolution of the songs as they went along. And then this is, again, a new version. So it's continuing that.
And how do you do that in your own mind? Because you are contemporizing it, but you're not making it. I presume, I haven't heard the record yet, but I presume it's not Taylor Swift. So you are giving it in the process of translation, you're making it 21st century, but here's something from the early 20th. Is that a journey that you take on the playing or in the singing or the recording or the arranging, or how does it work to take a song by these two girls from Oma to what you've done with it?
Yeah, a mixture of all those, and it's different for each song. I think there's three where the piano score was so beautiful and felt timeless that Ruth played in the studio. The others, for example, The Foggy Dew, were the piano arrangement felt like it didn't make as much as I would have liked of the just absolutely haunting melody. So changing the chords, that kind of created it or made it feel more modern. I wanted to embrace to an extent the Irish American nature. So I've a couple of the guys from Ullid are playing on it.
Okay.
Liam Bradley on drums, yeah. Nick Scott on bass. I've asked Trina Nadonal from the Bothy Band. She plays clavinet on one. Because I'd heard that she was going to, before COVID, she was going to do something with a couple of the pieces. And I'd always wanted the Bothy Band, or like, wow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She kindly played on one. So in some ways leaning into that, but then other bits, like two of the pieces, I changed the music completely. I kept the words and wrote new music. one being Thomas Moore's The Minstrel Boy.
Oh,
yeah. Because it just felt overly familiar, and I think there's something, like any cover that you hear where they do something radical with it, you hear it in a completely different light. Mm-hmm. So that was my aim with The Minstrel Boy. And then another one called It Was Only a Dream. The air for that, the melody comes from, it's a really old traditional tune. In English, it's The Red-Haired Man's Wife. But for the American market in 1870, they had written these words for it, which were really twee. It was like, oh, Seamus, my dear, I fear my heart is astray, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, that kind of thing. So that felt like it wasn't the casting that melody in the best light, so I wrote new words for that. So with each of them, there was a kind of different transformation, some of it arrangement, some of it, but even by the addition of backing vocals and things, which wouldn't have been in the original, to extreme examples, changing the words or changing the music.
It's interesting because you talk about it and it's like, I can see an artist, a carpenter, you have so many resources to work upon, which I don't think we think about. We think, oh, this is a musical album, so this is song and instrument. But what you're talking about is using the different, breaking that down and using the different things to hang the thing on, which must make variety as well. Although you're starting very Irish with The Foggy Dew and The Minstrel Boy, is there an Irish thread particularly in it?
Well, the collection was the person who collected them. They were mainly that. There's one outlier in that, which is By the Light of the Silvery Moon, which I remember watching Doris Day film with my mum. But that seemed to be an outlier, and there are probably a few of those things like that in the collection, because that was written by two New Yorkers who had written it for Vaudeville Theatre back in the day in 1909, I think it's from. But again, there was something, I love kind of pre-rock and roll kind of stuff anyway, but so we kept some of that feel in it.
Sounds a Duke special to me. Yeah, Vaudeville has been mentioned many a time, I suppose, in your work. So so that's great. And when you're doing that, your audience is, you have a very committed, loyal,
trusting.
You have. I mean, you know, in Mussenden, there it's bunged, and you seem to be able to do that. And you're having a tour coming up with David Ford as a support, which is, I mean, there's a double header. Bring him to Belfast, or are you? No,
yes.
You need to bring him to. Oh, you are.
Yeah.
Good. So when are they? What are they expecting now? Do you think, because you have stretched us, and I mean, this is the only thing in my collection this year that will sound like this. Mm. What do you want your audience to take from it?
Like any project that I take on, it feels like visiting another country, and that I feel like then I'm coming home with these artifacts that might be interesting to people back home. So I kind of like show them and say, look at this, you know. And then I'd love people to, I think the music needs to stand on its own, you know, full stop. If people put it on, I want it to be a beautiful experience for people, that they hear these songs and the songs resonate with them. I think there's the option of going deeper and exploring, okay, where do these songs come from? And I try to do that on the some of the explanation on the back. The other thing I'm doing, which you mentioned the band True earlier, and I thought I was the first to do this, but they may have beat me to it, but I'm only bringing this record out on vinyl or as a book. So the book, I realised what I miss about streaming and downloads is sleeve notes and the artwork. So I'm bringing it out as a book where it goes into much more detail about where the songs come from, the process, the creative process in terms of making the changes that you mentioned, in terms of bringing them to your audience today. I think True have done something similar. Well, maybe
I mean, I am not aware of the book.
I think so. But that, I don't know. I was thinking, I think I'm onto something here. Like for future records, I think it's just going to be vinyl and a book. And the book gives all that kind of richer content as to what was going through my head at the time, which you don't get on a download.
You have a tour coming up.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm hoping that this podcast will come out in time for you to plug that. You're going across.
Yeah, we're calling it Adventures Across the Water.
Okay.
So we'll start in Bristol on the 4th of November, and then Exeter, Southampton, Norwich, Leek, London, Manchester, I'm missing some, then up to Glasgow eventually, and then travelling over, and then the next day the Empire in Belfast will be the...
What's your Empire date, just to...
1st of December, I think.
You're good.
I think
most of those guys in Graham Norton, it takes Graham Norton to read it off the back of some, but...
I think it's the first or second in December.
Well, I look forward to that. Now, I'm also looking forward, because at Mussenden Temple, you played a couple of songs, and I was really quite taken by them. And then, as you talked about this record, I was sitting there going, well, I'm quite taken by them, but I'm not getting them on this record, so how long am I going to have to wait to get them? So you have other things running around your head.
Yeah.
And I suppose if you've done what you've done, there's loads of ideas running around your head, but, I mean, does that mean we won't have to wait long for more music?
I'm hoping so. I'd love to bring out some of the other songs that I've written over the past few years. Kieran Lavery is my guest at the Empire, and we thought, why don't we write some stuff for that to perform, to kind of give ourselves a deadline? So we've written a bunch of songs together. Art of Living was one that I did at Mussenden.
Oh,
so
I preached on it the next Sunday.
we wrote that together, and then I'm kind of back in kind of fairly frequent communication with Paul Pilot about making a new studio record. So we're just going to take that slowly and to and fro but kind of try and write some new material, which is kind of back in terms of more personal, obviously personal, direct, as opposed to through a third party in terms of responding to something else.
It's wonderful. I'm going to finish by asking you a question. I used to go to Calvin College, and my friend there, we used to, what he would do is he would have the artists who were playing that evening, and that could have been, I was there for... The Head and the Heart were playing, so the Head and the Heart came up to a lecture room at 3 o'clock and did an interview with the students, which was really fascinating. Joseph Arthur did one as well. And the last question that my friend Ken would ask was one I'd never heard before. He asked the artist what the artist would like from the listener. Because you've made this record, we take it home, and we're not passive in that either. So what could we do to get the most out of the record? What could we do to make this partnership between Duke Special, these translations of words, is there anything the listener can do? It's an interesting question.
It is. Well, I remember chatting about this with something similar with Colin Davison, the painter, and he was saying that, you know, that idea that the, for him, the viewer of the painting completes it. Part of what I was looking at in my studies was, what right do I have to meddle with these things, you know, to change poetry into song, to, you know, create a song from a painting, or in this case, to change the old song sheets. And I was thinking that, well, the main thing is I have the right to be moved. That's my human response, and my human right to be moved by art. And maybe the difference between then an artist and someone who isn't an artist is that my response then is to create something with that, with what I've been moved by. So I guess that would be my thought would, for the listener. I hope to be moved. Obviously, I can't make that happen, but to be open to be moved, maybe that's a thing. And play it loud.
That's always a good one. That was written in the corner of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, and I remember thinking as a 12-year-old, oh, the permission to play it loud.
Yeah.
Well, literally, I've been holding it as if you've been able to see it in podcast land for the entire interview, and I'll be going home this afternoon, late afternoon, to play it for the first time loud, and I am so looking forward to hearing what you've done with these. Thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us, and we'll chat to you again when you bring that songwriter album out with Paul Pilot in the near future. Thank you to Duke Special.
Thank you.
Peter Wilson. Cheers.
You've been listening to the Soul Surmise podcast with Steve Stockman. The series is produced in Hollywood by Peter Greer.